Get ready, book lovers. The 9th Annual Space Coast Book Lovers event is on June 18th through the 21st in legendary Cocoa Beach. Spend the weekend meeting your favorite authors, discovering new ones, and enjoying book signings, goodies, and fun activities. Choose from all-inclusive multi-day passes for the full experience, general admission with a tote bag, and VIP options. For info and tickets to Space Coast Book Lovers, visit legendarycocoabeach.com. Find your inner bookworm.
Attention Windows 10 users. Microsoft is ending support on October 14th, 2025. No more security updates, leaving your PC vulnerable. But there's good news. Upgrade to a Windows 11 PC from Dell.com for cutting-edge security, AI-powered tools, and seamless performance. Whether for work or play, Windows 11 keeps you ahead. Don't wait. Shop now at Dell.com and upgrade today.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. In today's episode, we had callers call in. We got to coach them on air. We got to help them out on air. But this was after the intro. Today's intro was 61 minutes long. In the intro, we talk about fat loss science, muscle building, longevity, family life, current events. It's a good time. By the way, if you want to be on an episode like this one, send us your question at live@mindpumpmedia.com. Now, this episode has some sponsors. The first one is Intera. Their skincare product, Luminos by Intera, has the highest amount of GHKCU you'll find anywhere. What is that? That's a peptide that will change the way your skin looks within one or two applications. It's extremely effective at boosting collagen production, reducing wrinkles, taking away UV damage. And they have a sale from July 1st to the 5th. If you use the code MPM, you get 15% off. Just go to enteraskincare.com/MPM. That's E-N-T-E-R-A skincare.com/MPM. Again, the code is MPM for that discount. This episode is also brought to you by Joy Mode. This is a pre-sex supplement. Take it 45 minutes before. You're going to get intimate for better blood flow and better performance, if you know what I mean. Go check them out. Go to tryjoymode.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump. Get 20% off. We also have a brand new sale this month. MAPS Split and the Anabolic Metabolism Bundle. Both of those are 50% off. If you're interested, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code July50 for the discount. Here comes the show.
T-shirt time! And it's T-shirt time.
Ah, shit, Doug. You know it's my favorite time of the week.
Two winners this week. One for Apple Podcasts, one for Facebook. The Apple Podcast winner is Endo Love. And for Facebook, we have Jared E. Yusey. Both of you are winners. Send the name I just read to iTunes@mindpumpmedia.com. Include your shirt size and your shipping address, and we'll get that shirt right out to you.
All right, you've heard us talk about high protein. You know the studies. Builds more muscle, helps you burn more body fat. There are health benefits, but it can be hard getting the right amount of protein, or to put it differently, optimize your protein intake. 1 gram of protein per pound of target body weight. We're going to talk about five tricks. Five easy ways to boost your protein intake. And this does not involve lots of supplements. Let's go.
I like this.
Yeah. Eat all the meat.
Let's talk about it.
You think about some of the most practical tips that we've given to clients,
yes,
that moved the needle and made the biggest difference. I'd have to say that this is probably one of the more important conversations, just because most clients undereat protein. You've heard us say it a million times, right, on here. But then, okay, it's great. You know you undereat protein. The next step is like, how do I get it? And do that in ways that doesn't radically change my current way of eating, because I think that's the hard part. Obviously, meal prepping 5 meals a day with high protein is optimal.
It's ideal, yeah.
But I mean, not everybody does that. So what are some little things that you can do to
boost. Give you that boost.
Yeah.
And you know, here's a real challenge. Eating your target body weight, because there's essential protein, which is low. Then there's what's considered optimal for fat loss, muscle gain, performance. Okay. That's about a gram per pound of target body weight, roughly. Some studies actually show a little more, some studies a little less. So we'll use the average, about 1 gram. So if you're a woman whose ideal body weight is 130 pounds, that's 130 grams of protein a day. Or If you're a woman whose ideal body weight is 150 pounds, which is more realistic, that's 150 grams of protein. It's 50 grams of protein for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What if you're a guy, 180 pounds? That's you know, 60 grams of protein or more per meal, or eat four meals at a high protein. It gets very challenging. Mm-hmm. And so what we're going to talk about is like kind of tricks. They're essentially hacks to squeeze in extra protein. Because when I work with clients on this, they would be able to do this here or there, but consistently they'd miss.
Yep.
Consistently they would miss because it was so challenging. So I'll start with the first one. And I figured this out when we were on the podcast.
Yeah.
This actually is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Because it's the easiest way to add, like, you know, 30 to 50 grams of protein per day. Just do this. Like, if you eat rice throughout the day, right? If you know, lunch and dinner involve rice, or some people three meals or four meals involve rice, instead of using water, use bone broth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, boom, instant collagen.
You said protein. About 30 grams extra?
Yeah, he's probably saying like 10 per meal.
Yeah.
10 per meal?
Yeah.
You're probably bumping up close to 10 grams.
Yeah. So now your meal, you have the rice you're going to eat anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Now that because it's made with bone broth instead of water, you've added
supercharged.
You've added 8 to 12 grams of protein.
We figured this out.
And it tastes better too.
We figured this out on the podcast when we were sponsored by Kettle and Fire back in the day.
Yeah. Yep.
I remember that. I remember. Mm-hmm. I remember getting it. I think I don't remember how it came about, but we were talking about different ways to use it, and I don't remember who did it first, but put it inside the rice and said, you know, that to this day, that's how Katrina makes our rice. Yeah. We've always, like,
it tastes better too.
It's tastier, gives you more protein. It's funny. I used the same tip when I was coaching the football team because the parents were finding it so difficult to hit these protein targets, but also to get the kids to like eat more volume. And so, you know, kind of like the Monster Mash thing, but, you know, the ground meat, the rice to now like optimize the rice a bit so it has more proteins, everything.
That was my dish. That's the dish right there. Rice, lean ground beef. And then you cook the rice with bone broth, add a bouillon cube if you want it to have some like saltiness to it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's extra protein that, again, you're eating the same volume of rice that you normally have.
Right.
Except now instead of water, which has zero protein, you've got bone broth in it. So it tastes better and it bumps the protein content. And again, for somebody who's eating rice three times a day, you know, there's an extra from a you know, a whole natural source.
Pretty small change to really help out with that.
And again, it tastes really good. Number two, this one's an interesting one because you can eat the same ounces of meat, but your protein intake will go higher if it's lean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 12 ounces of lean red meat, for example, like filet mignon, will have 72 grams of protein. 72 grams of protein versus a 12 ounce ribeye, which has less. I don't know why that's like backwards right there.
That's backwards.
That's backwards, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to get like 12 more grams of protein with the filet than you would with the ribeye because per ounce it's higher in protein. So you can do this simply by switching to leaner cuts, especially red meat. So ground beef, for example, if you go with ground beef instead of going with the fattier amount, go with the leaner amount, you're eating the same amount, but the protein intake is
wasn't this what we found too with like Butcher Box and the grass finished beef being like less fatty?
Yes.
Get more protein per ounce.
Yeah, grass finished meat has more protein per ounce than traditional because it's lower in fat. So
I love this strategy for sure.
Yeah. Chicken breast, by the way, not my favorite cut, but it's a protein bomb.
Yeah.
Like if you want just 50 grams of protein.
That's what you're going for, yeah.
Yeah, now to make it taste good.
I prefer to do this with red meat. So I prefer to do a leaner cut with red meat.
It doesn't make a huge difference with the chicken, does it?
Yeah, no. Well, it doesn't make a huge difference. Not only that, but it's just like the reheating of chicken breast is just rough. I mean, it just really is. Now, you can, by the way, you can cook your chicken. You can crock pot it in like a bone broth and things like that, and it'll make it more moist and
shredded version of it.
Is, and so that's a strategy. So your chicken breast isn't it. So if I would do chicken breast, which we still do occasionally, Katrina will crock pot it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll crock pot it and that'll really keep it like the moisture in it. And so that's still decent when we and then we'll shred it and then we'll put it over rice or something.
The red meat example, we should use a skirt steak. That's a better, I think, choice for high protein.
Of lean?
Yeah. For high protein content. Here's another one. Actually, you know, I forgot about this one, but back in the day, I'd have clients do this as an easy whole food way to boost protein, because I would have them mass boil hard boiled eggs. And then in between meals, as a snack, that have like two hard boiled eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So you do that.
Yes, yeah, convenient snack.
Dude, you do that three times a day. What is that? 12, 24, 36 grams of protein. And, you know, hard boiled eggs are compact, so it's not like super filling. So if you eat two of those in between your meals, you have 12 grams of protein each time, high in amino acids, very anabolic, very inexpensive, easy way to boost your protein intake.
So I looked ahead and I saw all your five tricks, and none of them are, my favorite one is not included.
What is it?
That has to do with eggs. So I'll share it here since you're bringing up eggs. And I think when you make dinner, double the size, and then throwing in for breakfast, you just throw three eggs and some cheese on whatever that is, like literally
scramble it.
Yeah. Like think of all the different dinners that you have, chicken, ground beef, name it. And it's normally rice or sweet potato or something that is your carb in the morning with a couple eggs and cheese over it into a scramble. It makes such a great high protein
versus just like scrambling 10 eggs.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of just having 10 eggs, because I don't like that. I'm not a big egg. I don't even like eggs that much, but I think mixed with like a good meat rice type of dinner, it makes this great, almost like a burrito bowl. That I have for breakfast. That's like a staple for me.
I had a buddy that was a trainer that worked for me, and he, you know, on a budget, he didn't have a lot of money, and he would like I said earlier, he would boil a bunch of eggs.
Was his name Ronnie?
Huh?
Why, you guys live with Ronnie. Yeah, he'd do that, but he'd also, it was that and turkey burger patties.
Oh, and just eat them.
That was it.
Yeah,
that's all he ate. I swear on my life.
Yeah. No, this he would have a bag, like a Ziploc bag with hard boiled eggs.
Uh huh.
And then throughout the day, every once in a while, because they're easy to eat, you put a little Tabasco sauce on it, and boom.
Tabasco?
Yeah.
On hard-boiled eggs?
Yeah. No, just salt, man.
Yeah,
I like salt. Yeah.
Salt's easy. I've never seen
it. No, you would Tabasco sauce it and then crush them each time.
Okay.
Next up. All right, this one involves a supplement, but this is easy way to add protein. And it doesn't require a lot of protein powder to do this, but instead of drinking water with your meal, just have one scoop of protein. You know, like a little bit of a chocolate drink while you're eating your meal.
So I used to do this as a kid, and this was before I'd seen things like Paleo Valley has a great boat. Their stuff is so light and easy that this thin. Yes, goes really, like, I remember we used to do like EAS and stuff like that when we were kids.
Oh, the thick stuff?
Yeah, it was like
too filling.
Oh man, it was like just, it was cake batter trying to get that down. Yeah. And that was with a meal. More like
collagen.
Collagen whey is good too. Yeah. Whey can be pretty thin too if you just use a scoop.
Yeah, you just shake it with water.
Yeah, you just shake it. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's the trick here, is to just like shake with just water, make it really thin and light, and then it is easy to take it down with a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
If you do like a blended thick shake with dinner, it's like the opposite effect.
Yep,
I feel like.
Yep. Yep. Lastly, try high protein desserts, because they taste kind of sweet. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a couple recipes. They taste kind of sweet, which that sweetness, you know, it's a different flavor. It avoids palate fatigue. At the end of the day, I don't know what it is about it, but I don't know about you guys, but at the end of the day, I'm always available. I'm always open to have a dessert like food, and you can make a high protein one. One of my favorites is like a Greek yogurt.
My go-to.
Parfait, yeah. You just literally, one cup of unsweetened Greek yogurt. There's 20 grams of protein. Add some mixed berries, some chia seeds. Add a little bit of honey. And you can mix it all together. You can chill it so that it's got a better texture.
I mean, I like this one a lot too, Sal. So a lot of times when somebody struggles with getting protein, it isn't just that they have a hard time getting protein. They're also eating something else. Like they eat sweets, so they eat a lot of carbs. Yeah. They snack on chips, or they tend to get calories from other, because they're obviously normally not
non-protein sources.
Right, and so this is something that has worked so well for me, because I have the dessert craving. I have a sweet tooth after dinner, watching a movie or doing something. I always tend to want to have ice cream or snack. I have those cravings. And so replacing it with Greek yogurt is close enough
Yep.
That I get that feel like a,
especially if you make it cold afterwards.
Yeah. So No. So the Greek yogurt with the berries and a little bit of granola and some honey is just an incredible dessert. I mean, I love having that afterwards. And even if you just finished dinner, I still seem to be able to get that down. So
Here's one that the protein powder cheesecake cups, which are delicious. Now I don't have these because these are dairy, but I've tasted them.
Mm.
And this will give you about 15 grams of protein per cup. So you take a half a scoop of protein powder. So you could use like whey, vanilla, a half a cup of low-fat cream cheese, 1 tablespoon almond butter, a teaspoon of stevia, 1/4 cup of crushed graham crackers. And what you do is you mix the protein powder, the cream cheese, the almond butter, and the stevia until it's smooth. You put it into cups. You top it with the graham cracker crumbs, and then you put it in the fridge or the freezer, and you have 15 grams of protein peanut butter cups, or almond butter cups,
yeah,
essentially.
I mean, all these can be made in your Ninja Creamy, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that.
Yeah, I mean, you do this all the time.
All the time.
This is like your thing.
These are all the stuff. Like, this is, I've like, you name it, I've tried
that. Have you done the cottage cheese chocolate mousse one that I have there?
I don't think, I've done
the peanut butter chocolate cups.
We've done peanut butter chocolate cups a bunch of times. I don't know if I've done the cottage cheese chocolate mousse.
It's 1/2 cup of low-fat cottage cheese, 1 tablespoon or a tablespoon of cocoa powder, 1 teaspoon maple syrup, 1/4 teaspoon vanilla extract, and then you can add chocolate shavings if you want. You blend the cottage cheese, the cocoa, the syrup, and the vanilla till it's smooth. You chill it, then you put the chocolate shavings on it, and it's supposed to be
super good. That.
Yeah, and that's 14 grams of protein. I mean, if you do stuff like this and you plan, because most people will miss, in my experience, when they miss their protein, it's around 30 to 50 grams. I don't care who you are. People are trying to hit it, and they're off by 30, 50 grams. That's typically what I found. Yeah. Doing what we just said, you'll hit that. No problem.
So the same way that you do that, you made the point about the eggs. So Katrina makes these protein peanut butter balls. You've probably seen them in my refrigerator before. Yeah. And she makes them in bulk. So she'll spend a Saturday where she makes 20, 30 of those things or more. And we just put them in a big Tupperware thing in the refrigerator. And each one, I think a single bite is 8 grams of protein. And so I eat 2 or 3 of those at a time throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And it's just another way to boost that. But yeah, I think that if you do planning like that, the bone broth thing, the breakfast tip like that, and a lot of this for clients was always just getting them to create these new habits around snacking and eating.
Totally.
And if you could get them to like focus on hitting their protein intake and doing it with these habits, then this becomes a part of your lifestyle. Yep. Like pre me getting ready for a show and really having to dial my diet into the level that I had to, I didn't do a lot of this stuff. I just, being honest, and so I fell into the common trap of, you know, sometimes I'm hitting my protein intake, sometimes I'm not. And that was enough to really keep me from really progressing consistently. And it wasn't until I competed did I have to show progress consistently. And the diet was the thing that I was most dialed on. And at first it's a bit challenging because it's different from how you eat, but over a year or two of doing that consistently, you start to build this habit and routines around snacking, eating, desserts, all the above. Mm-hmm. And now it's just become a lifestyle. I do attribute that. I mean, I've been talking a lot on the show about how fitness in my 40s has gotten easier. I do attribute not only all the muscle mass from training that I got, but also some of the habits that I picked up from competing that have now just kind of stuck around. Like for like the Greek yogurt for
that's
dessert.
That's a go-to for you.
Yeah, forever it was either a dessert or just white knuckle it and do nothing, where it's now it's like, oh no, I don't need a white knuckle it. I'll just go have that. And that just feeds into my protein intake and it's a good dessert. And so that was a habit that I created that I didn't have before. It helps me stay healthy, fit, and keep muscle.
Awesome. I read a meta-analysis on resistance training alone for fat loss in comparison to cardiovascular training alone for fat loss. In other words, what do the studies show when people just start strength training? They don't change their diet. They don't change anything else. And then what does it show for cardio when they add that and they don't do anything else? Okay, so how do they compare?
Love this.
How do they compare for fat loss? So here's what the meta-analysis, because I found a meta-analysis for both. Here's what they show. Cardio, by the way, I want to preface this. Exercise alone with no other intervention, no dietary intervention is a terrible way to burn body fat. So
yeah.
if you don't fix your diet, it's going to be very hard to lose substantial body fat. You'll improve your health. You'll improve your mobility, your function.
Can we speculate on what happened?
Yeah. What do you guys think? Cardio by itself versus strength training.
I actually think cardio by itself lost more more fat. Not a lot, but I bet it lost a little bit more fat. But I also think it lost equal amount as muscle. And so, and then the different, and then the, I think that the just, and again, we're saying no intervention of diet. So I'm assuming that these people
are just, they just had these people work out
right
one way or the other.
Right. And so I would think that somebody would run like crazy, and they would end up losing a decent amount of body fat just purely out of the extra activity they weren't doing without the diet intervention, but they would also lose quite a bit of muscle. The people who lifted weights, I think would be just barely behind the body fat. I think they'd be close, but then they would actually retain or build muscle. And so the overall
recomposition, like they built muscle, but the same amount of body fat they came in with was sort of kind of the same. But
yeah, body fat percentage would be better in the muscle people or in the lifting people, that body fat percentage. But I think fat, there's more fat loss in the running.
So you guys don't have much faith in your strength training. So
it's even better than
strength training edged out. Just a little.
Okay, so
for fat loss.
Okay, well, so that's I said barely edged out on the other way.
Now for weight loss, cardio won.
Yes, because they lost muscle.
They lost muscle.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
No, you said cardio would lose a little more fat,
but barely edged it out. I said.
Percentage of body fat have been better for the strength.
But strength training still lost more body fat.
Yeah, so that's impressive. It's impressive that it edged it out.
Now think about so again, I'll just say it again. It's just very
So one more thing, because I just want to know more of the study. Were they exercising an equal amount of time?
So this is a meta-analysis. So these are studies of studies at looking at both interventions.
Because
by the way, it's not much. I'm gonna tell you guys right now. The average fat loss for people who just lifted weights was like 3 pounds. Okay. Mm-hmm. So and for cardio, it was like 2.8 pounds. You don't lose a lot when you don't change your diet as well.
Sure.
That's just what happens. Now, health will improve. So you don't have to, if you don't change your diet, you just exercise, regardless of how you exercise, so long as it's appropriate, health improves. Now, I'll argue, and I have data to support that strength training, if you had to compare the two for overall health, would win.
Of course.
Mainly from the insulin sensitivity.
Yeah, the building muscle part and the benefits of that.
Now, weight on the scale went down more with the cardio group, but that's because they paired some muscle.
Yeah, because they lost. I was close to what I said. But I'm surprised, actually, that the muscle still edged. The lifting weights.
And the speculation was because of the boosted metabolic rate.
Of course.
That came from the strength. If you stretch that study out five years.
It gets worse. It would get better.
Strength training would crush it.
And so people need to understand, okay, so what is happening if there's no diet intervention, what is happening so positive for the people that are lifting weights? Well, what's happening is that, we talk about this all the time,
feed the muscle.
Beautiful part about lifting weights and in conjunction with, like, let's say not having the best diet, is at least when you overeat, some of those calories are getting partitioned over to building muscle.
Right,
that's the benefit. With cardio, it doesn't work that way. Right. Like any overage of calories goes to fat. It doesn't go to anything else. So if all things are equal as far as the exercise part, the added benefits that you get from cardio, there are none.
And I will argue this all day long, because these are meta-analysis of studies, and these studies typically are, you know, what are they, 3 months long, 4 months long at the most. You stretch this out over 2 years, 3 years, five years.
Just compounding.
Strength training will beat it on all fronts because of the metabolic advantage. By the way, you might be wondering, how is it that they're not losing a lot of weight? Your body adapts very quickly to activity. It learns how to become more efficient with your overall calorie burn. Here's why. Cardio burns a lot more calories than strength training. That's a fact. You run for an hour. Or you lift weights for an hour, you're going to burn way more calories on an elliptical or running or cycling or swimming. That's true. The difference is strength training, the adaptation that it triggers is metabolically advantageous. Building muscle speeds up your metabolism.
Yeah.
It makes your body want to burn body fat on its own more, and it makes you more sensitive to insulin, meaning your hormones start to work better in terms of fat loss for you. Insulin sensitivity is great for fat loss. Insulin resistance is terrible for fat loss. But in these studies, the meta-analysis, the scale went down more for cardio, but fat loss was roughly the same. Why? Because the strength training group didn't lose muscle. And in some of those studies that they took, they actually built a little bit of muscle.
That's what I figured.
Right. Now you combine it with fixing your diet. Now you've got the magic formula. Right?
Oh yeah. You take those examples and you give one piece of advice, go hit protein intake.
Yeah.
And that radically.
Eat it first.
Yeah. That radically shifts that those results too, positively for the people that are lifting weights. Where it does, it's negligible for the to the runners. The runners, you tell both groups, now all I want you to do, so since we didn't do anything, no diet interventions, and all we've done is cardio and building and lifting weights to do this. All right, next thing I'm going to tell these two groups,
hit your target body weight and protein,
change nothing else, just that. And that muscle
building—it's synergistic with strength training because of the muscle building.
Yes,
it's going to benefit the cardio group too. That's going to be more muscle preserving. It's going to also reduce calories because it's satiety producing. But it's synergistic with strength training because you're fueling the muscle growth that the strength training is triggering, thus improving the metabolic advantage even more.
Yeah.
But I like this study, right? I like it. But I also like to communicate to people like, and I train people like this, by the way. All of us did. I had lots of clients who did nothing with their diet and they just came and worked out with me twice a week. And it took me years to get them to change their diet. Why? Diet's hard to change. That's the hardest thing to change. It's the most ingrained in us. It's just the most challenging. There's much more attached to how we eat than there is to, I can make it to the gym twice a week. But so I had lots of clients that didn't change their diet. Here's what happened to those people. Over the years, because it was a slow process, because they didn't change their diet, over the years, they got leaner and leaner and leaner. And leaner, and they got stronger and stronger. And there wasn't this radical change in body fat. There was radical changes in health, radical changes in strength, radical changes in mobility. But fat loss was a slow, gradual process. On the flip side, managing gyms, you see these people. They'd come get a membership, and they would just on the treadmill 4 days a week. That's all they did. Mm-hmm. You would see this initial weight loss, and that was it. That was it. The rest of the time, they were members. You know, for years and years and years, they looked the same.
Exactly the same.
And they had good stamina and endurance.
But it's always a mystery to me.
But yes.
Further on.
I know.
You know, since we're talking about fat loss, did you guys see the recent thing, the news with the Ozempic recently?
No, what?
They failed to file for their patent renewal. They're going to lose billions
what
of dollars.
What a stupid,
costly mistake.
Who's that guy?
I think it was up in Canada.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, up in Canada, they didn't file their extension.
So up in Canada, they can generic it.
They can sell generic. Yeah,
which will result in billions of dollars. Imagine how fast that dude got fired.
Yeah, imagine if you're that guy in the meeting. You imagine that, boss?
It was literally
lost the market.
I turned it in a day late.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. It was like literally they just failed to respond to the renewal thing in time, and then the patent expired, which opened the door for...
Good news for people.
Yeah. For sure.
Good. By the way, you're going to start smuggling peptides from Canada.
Yeah.
Bro, you're going to Canada. Can you bring me back some semaglutide?
Hey, did we talk it openly on the podcast yet about our conversation with Dr. Seeds and just the speculation around that?
No, because I want to have him on the show.
Well, we're going to have him on it, but I still think it's fun because to our credit, okay. I remember when we had Israel Tell on the show, and he was basically breaking the news to us what's coming down the pipe, and then we saw the news and we talked about it, and right away, just we were very hesitant as far as like this seems. And we speculated on what we thought might be some of the dangers of this, I thought that was a really like smart on your part of thinking like, okay. If people on Ozempic and these GLP-1s, what we've seen, really struggle to get enough calories to sustain muscle mass, and then you take a drug that ends up still building muscle in this calorie deficit, but that tissue still needs energy, then won't it rob other organs and stuff like that in order to do that, which I thought was a really pretty strong theory and idea by you. But we brought that to Seeds, and he brought up a whole nother.
So what happened? So there was a study that we talked about on a previous episode where they took monkeys and they took groups of monkeys. One group diet alone, another group GLP-1, another group GLP-1 plus myostatin and activin A inhibitor. So both myostatin and activin are inhibitors of muscle growth. And when you take the brakes off, you just build muscle. So like, all right, what's going to happen here? And what happened was the monkeys got lean and built hella muscle on a low calorie diet,
which is insane.
Crazy. And now my, and they're not working out. Like, they're not making these monkeys lift weights.
No.
So my speculation was, if you take the brakes off, myostatin and activin, you're going to fuel muscle growth at the expense of the rest of your body.
Yeah.
You're going to steal
it's
nutrients.
It's not going to be functional muscle tissue.
Well, that's what Seed said,
which
Dr. Yeah. Seed said, this is not going to be a
which kind of blew
muscle.
All of our mind.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You're going to have layers of muscle tissue that aren't healthy.
It's useless.
Which makes a lot of sense. Why, you know, you've seen the Whippet dog or the bull.
Yeah.
And you haven't seen them actually move or do anything like video wise.
So the Belgium
just pictures.
Doug, Google Belgium blue bull. So the Belgium blue bull is a myostatin deficient, for lack of a better term, bull. Now, it wasn't done in a lab. It was bred this way.
Yeah. Yep.
We just figured out that's why they were so muscular, because we learned about myostatin. We tested these bulls and like, oh, we bred these bulls to have this myostatin deficiency. So when you look at a picture of this bull, there it is right there. It looks like a bull, like a cartoon bodybuilder bull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. They just slapped now, muscle
what,
on
now,
top of it.
Now what Dr. Seed said that like was such a duh moment for me, or like an aha right. moment was, we've seen these forever. We've talked about these bulls.
Yeah, see
a
how
bunch
long
times,
they've been around, Doug.
But we've never seen an example of like this bull like pulling, you know, this the strength of 15 yeah. other bulls. Like no. why? Like you would think
these aren't
see
the all that muscle.
You'd it's like, useless oh, muscle.
Yeah. These are
let's
not
put it to work.
These are not the work. These are not the work bulls. Yeah. When you want a bull that's strong,
the ox.
So the early 20th century is when they were made, and what do they use both for? Doug, scroll down. Both for dairy and beef. There you go. So they were bred for more meat to eat. They were not bred for more work.
Yeah.
Working bulls are not Belgian blue bulls. In fact, Belgian blue bulls are bigger and not stronger. In fact, they're
just tastier.
They don't even perform as well. So now picture this. Muscular people, really muscular people
that are weak,
who are similar to obese people.
Yeah, this is gonna be so
where
weird.
They're walking around like lumbered.
Yeah.
With, you know, big muscle, it's kind of useless. So that's what Dr. Seed said will happen with these drugs.
Yeah, wow. Which is really interesting. And
talk about pure, like, just
and you know
cosmetic.
He's gonna adopt it immediately.
Bro, bodybuilders.
Yeah. Listen, we have...
don't care about, like, function.
This is the equivalent of, like, butt implants and, you know, breast implants. You're going to have buffed, dysfunctional people. Like, dysfunctional in terms of muscular, like, strength and performance.
Yeah.
So it's all for
like
look,
a whole
all
new
for
category,
cosmetic.
Yeah.
So you're gonna be a big like can't move really well. That's weird. Dude.
And then yeah. Who knows what are all the that downstream effects of that, right?
Because then
I still think your theories of like organs being robbed of nutrients, like you think you got all this extra useless muscle that can't be better for the organs.
Keep up that amount of consumption.
Yeah, that can't be better for the heart. That's got to be worse.
I predict that this
is where BMI actually would matter.
There you go.
Right?
I predict the risks will be more like obesity than they will like having muscle.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have more weight, not necessarily more insulin sensitivity. Tissue
it's
that
not
needs to
beneficial
be
it's not functional
no, it'll look a particular way
yeah
but
yeah.
you're not very healthy
yeah
that's gonna be weird dude.
You'll look more impressive in a weird way
that you'll push a guy like that oh yeah that's so anti
I already feel like that already
that's like Justin's anti you know
this is like the ultimate balloon animal guy
yeah I mean and the other fear is this,
like, Justin
the mTOR, which is a signaler of muscle growth, which is fine. I know they like to say, oh, mTOR for cancer. No. In the context of a healthy, it's fine. But we don't know what hammering mTOR into the sky, what that could potentially do. Will that increase cancer risk?
Right.
That's where you might see some weird tumors and shit start to grow. Like, whoa, nice biceps. No, that's a tumor. It's actually another bicep.
Interesting.
You know?
Interesting. Totally.
Well, speaking of compounds and stuff, I got to mention GHKCU. That
for skin.
That peptide is so crazy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. It works so well. I've been going into the more of the research on GHKCU and skin health and how it helps with UV exposure and sunburn and all that stuff. That peptide is incredible. So the company Luminos, the Intera product, Luminos, they have a very high concentration of GHKCU in there. The highest you'll find.
That in Caldera is all I use on my psoriasis now.
Bro,
that's it. Those two
things. It is so powerful. Like we have family friends that'll come over. My wife will have them put it on when they come in, and then by the end, by the time they leave, they're looking in the mirror and they're like, "What?"
I had some at my house, and we had been talking about this, I don't know, a while back, about like using it anytime I got a sunburn. I was out working the yard all day long and didn't have my hat on or anything. I had like the total like stereotypical redneck, you know, where it was just everything was red and had this huge line right here on my face.
Did you put it on?
And I put it on, and then the next day I didn't have anything.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was weird.
I told you guys my niece, right?
So what is the peptide signaling or doing? Is it like mitochondria health, or it's like regenerating faster? Or
skin repair. It's a signaler that says repair, repair, repair. It's like turbocharging your skin's ability
to repair.
To repair and handle stress.
Interesting.
And so collagen production skyrockets. So you put it on and it's like your skin's, I mean, I hate saying this because everybody says this, but you look younger, like wrinkled, everything. You look younger because you basically, what you're doing as you get older, your skin stops being able to do what it did when you were younger. Yeah. But GHK just is
more weathered and
dude, it's this way of doing
wrinkly.
That. I know, it's pretty cool.
That is cool.
I read a study on coffee that you might like, Justin.
Okay.
Is it a positive one?
Yeah, it is.
Keep up your habit, you addict.
No. Oh, here you go. Look. So GHK signals skin cells to increase the synthesis of collagen and elastin, which is what makes it look more.
So is there any studies that share or show?
Wound healing. That's right. It's good for wound healing, too.
Mm, of course.
I forgot about that. There's lots of studies on that.
I imagine that's why it's good for putting on my psoriasis.
Yeah.
So it's healing that, because that's. GHKCU paired with like a collagen protein, any benefits?
Supplement?
Yeah.
Any
benefits to do them together?
Probably.
I would think so, too.
I mean, it might be a good idea to like take a bunch of essential amino acids. And then and then use it.
Hmm.
That might be a good idea. I would say put it on and get in front of the red light.
Yeah.
Does she?
Oh yeah. After she gets her night shower, her routine is she rubs the.
We ran out, dude. They need to send me.
She rubs the luminous on, and then she sits in front of the red light for 10 minutes. That's like her thing. She's better at it than I am. She's
bro. Really it's concerned. Better than. I wish women like Botox. Do this.
Oh yeah.
This looks like Botox, except your face doesn't become paralyzed. That's how big of a difference.
Well, it's the opposite of what Botox does.
That's right.
Botox, you inject and it kills all those cells, right? It basically kills all those muscles, and that's what they do, right? And then this is like basically rejuvenating or making it healthier, younger.
Atrophies your little muscles.
We were watching, what show is it? Love Island. Okay.
Oh my God.
Listen, not my choice.
Bro. I mean, we're all guilty of watching some Love trash Island, TV. That's like real trash TV.
Is that where they're like trying to see if they still got it, and they're like,
yeah, they're trying to break, each other up.
Is that like Temptation Island? Or
no,
is this...
Love Island is just, it's everything that's wrong with the world on a TV show.
I was like, who's so going on this
I'm connecting with my daughter. And
she likes it.
One of the things we do is try to meet her where she's at. You know, so she wants to watch the thing. All right, let's watch it so we can be a part of her life.
Okay? Sure.
And then you have influence.
I can get down that.
So she's like, oh, I like this show.
It probably sparks a good conversation.
It's so hard not to like comment the entire time.
Yeah, good.
Because like, oh, the way that they're coming out, these people coming out, it's like so ridiculous. And then they're like, okay, you're going to make out with two guys and doing, and like my daughter's watching this and I just want to rip my hair out, you know, like, oh, what am I, you know, but we're watching it. I'm trying to like, again, influence her. But anyway, the host of that, this really beautiful woman, but something was wrong like with her face. And it's going to sound mean, but I was watching, I'm like, something's not right. And my wife's like, that's Botox.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, you're right.
Yeah.
No matter what happened, like her mouth would move, but everything else looked identical. Yeah, it was got to be the Botox.
Oh, I mean, that's the part too. That's like it's starting to make a lot of people look the same, which is weird. That's part of the beautiful thing about humans is that we have all our.
You know what's crazy about that? When you paralyze the muscles of your face and you're not able, you know how much communication.
Yeah.
Is
subtle communication.
Subconscious.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why, you know, I feel a particular way by talking to this person. Mm-hmm. I can feel their energy or whatever. What's happening, my brain is picking up cues on subtle changes.
On their posture, on
your
face,
your eyebrows, your nose.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you paralyze all that, it actually can decrease, my theory is, it'll decrease your ability to connect with other people, and not just them connect with you.
That would be an interesting study to show, like, on average, if it makes people less likable. Like if they did, you know how they did that one study with like the scars faces and you just like grade them like that. If they did something similar like that, where you have all these Botox faces and he's like, are these people more trustworthy or would you like this person on a scale of 1 to 10 and see if they would be less liked?
Well, here's my theory.
Yeah, there's degrees of it for sure.
Hear me out. Cause I've read studies on psychology around this, right? So there are subtle cues that my brain picks up on that I'm not aware of that'll give me a feeling about you, whether it's happy or sad or tense. Or even empathize with you a little bit. And a lot of it is based off of your posture, your voice inflection, the health that how you appear to be healthy, but also the subtle changes in your eyebrows, your eyes, your nose, your ears, all the things that I'm not fully aware of. So I can't empathize and connect as well with you when that's all paralyzed. Here's the flip side. When you're looking at a face, there's studies on this. When you look at a face with a facial expression, your face slightly mirrors it just a tiny bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they think the reason why you're doing that is it's helping you empathize as well. So I bet you we can find studies on this. I bet you they exist, that lots of Botox reduces your ability to empathize with other people, not just their ability to empathize with you.
The other day I was watching I had my headphones in and sometimes I like to people watch. And I was noticing that when people were interacting and talking to each other, the person that was listening to was still like subtly mouthing the words of the person in front of them talking. Yeah. And it was like, you don't pick up on that a lot, but like it's like subconscious.
It is. You're finding yourself changing your accent just a little bit because you're talking to someone.
Dude, that happened to me in Ireland when I was with my brother. started to.
I'm guilty of that
the
too.
The inflection.
If you're around it enough, contagious. You just naturally do it.
Yeah.
That's just showing you kind of what I'm. Doug, look up. Does Botox affect your ability to empathize? Now imagine this, a mother, you have a newborn baby and all they can read is that. And the baby's looking up at you while you're breastfeeding the baby and the baby sees a face that doesn't emote. Could that potentially change the development of the brain baby's brain?
For sure. The question is how much, right? Is it negligible or is it like a lot?
I don't know, man, because you add that up over years. I mean, I think it's got an effect.
There's got to be ways that we could probably
study. Do you see any studies on this, Doug?
Yes. So it does show that Botox could alter how people perceive and express their own emotions, but does not seem to affect their ability to empathize.
Yeah, right.
Hey, speaking of that, I had one of our listeners who asked me a question on my question, and I answered it. So I'm curious to see you guys. What is empathy to you?
What is empathy?
Yeah.
I feel empathy is the ability to project yourself into somebody's situation.
I think it's being able to perceive how they feel so you can empathize with them. Mm. Is that right?
I feel like that's what it is.
Yeah, I don't think
let's see what the internet says.
So your ability to understand somebody else's perspective, right? Yeah. So how well can you do that? Like
put yourself in their shoes.
Walk in their shoes.
Yeah, how well can you tolerate, understand somebody else's thoughts and beliefs
The ability to understand and share the feelings of another person.
Mm-hmm.
It involves stepping into someone's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd say it's a real, when you think about it, we throw it around, people say it all the time, but it's like, it really is a true art and skill. And it's only really challenged when people say things that you disagree with or you don't necessarily empathize naturally to. Right. Like, it's real easy to empathize with someone who it's like, they lose their father. And it's like, okay, it's easy for me to have empathy with that because I understand that feeling. Yeah. And it's like, that's not real empathy to me. Real empathy is the ability to do it when it's not natural. When it's like, I actually have to actively think, I don't know what it's like to do that. And let me try and understand why maybe this person comes off this way, or maybe why I don't like them is maybe that's because I am having a hard time empathizing with their situation or their beliefs or their perspective. Yeah. So there's a real art to
it's a female superpower.
The way I actually answered this and said, I think I'm not very good at it. I do think that I try and work on it. I said, I follow my wife's lead. She's incredible. Sure. Katrina has this ability to empathize with everybody. Mm-hmm. And it obviously is a
women in
natural gift.
Women in general have this gift, which it comes with its own challenges, right?
Uh-huh.
Women are really... Men are, I mean, if we were to be...
we're good at picking out predators.
Yep.
And that's what we have to, because, we want that trait.
Well, this is
somebody to empathize.
No, you're right.
And we want somebody to always see that Because we have to protect that.
What a great way to highlight the differences of sexes and why we make such a good team. Yeah. Because you're exactly right, Justin. So my natural inclination when I run into a stranger that seems off or suspect is danger and like, oh, that guy's a creep or this, that. Hers is like, you know, he might have had a really bad day today, hon. Like, you have no idea. He might have just got bad news at work. And like, what your feeling is that? And it's, wow, you crazy. Yeah. He's fucking creepy. You know what I'm saying? But together you balance each other out, right? So you kind of put her on alert a little bit. Maybe you don't just go cuddle up to that guy or whatever, what's going on with him. But then at the same time, too, it makes me go like, well, maybe I won't be so knee-jerk reaction to something he says or does. Yeah. Maybe I can understand. So it's like the combination of the two works.
Do you guys have empathy?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Do you guys have empathy triggers? Like, if you watch a movie, what are the things in movies that get you?
Anything like, about kids? Yeah.
Me too.
Yes. Yeah. Especially like if they're sick or whatever. You know, it's like some sob story where they lost their kid, or I'm like, ah.
So I was watching Lilo and Stitch. Now it's live action. Okay.
Got you.
And well, because first off, I don't know if you guys remember the cartoon or whatever, but live action, same thing, same story, right? But you got this little girl. First of all, they both lost their parents. So now it's bigger sister is taking care of the little sister. And the little girl is, she feels left out, and the kids are kind of poking fun at her. So I empathize with the little girl right away, but I empathized a lot with the older sister because I was the oldest. So I immediately was like, oh my God, if I had to take care of my siblings, I could totally feel what that would feel like and the responsibility. Because the older sister in the movie, she foregoes going to college because she has to stay home to take care of her little sister. So that's a trigger.
So if I see a movie and there is a feel-good part around like the father, it just, I fight back tears. It takes, there's obviously a lot of therapy that needs to be done there. They're like, because it's like a feel-good moment. For like where the dad and the
did something good.
Yes. Yeah. And the dad and the child are like really like bonding, connecting like that. It takes everything in me not to break down crying. So it's like, there's obviously something there that like, that's like why it's like it shouldn't be something I cry about because it's like a happy moment in a movie. It's not a kid losing something or pain. It's actually a feel good moment.
Out.
So there's this like emotion. This emotion comes up, and I have to pull the Justin and like push him back. Yeah, push
him back. I'm not
supposed to cry right here. I'm not supposed to cry.
Everybody's
right here.
So open here. I'm just like,
no, I have my moments. And I'm very aware of that. I've told you like it was something in my last decade of like introspective stuff for me is like. Why does that always come up? And it's in weird parts of the movie. It's not parts that are traditionally like people like old Yeller, when the dog dies, you cry, when the family member dies. Like that doesn't get me. What gets me is like a feel good comeback moment with dad or something like that. And I was like oh God,
you don't know where that comes from.
Makes sense, dude.
Well, I'm sure it comes from my childhood. If not having a dad, I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. And so
of course.
It's also, you know, I always question like, okay, so that is, you know, is it a weakness or is it a strength? Because
depends how you use it.
Right. Because I think it's also what has driven me to be a good dad.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It could have made you a shitty dad too.
Right.
It's all in how you choose.
I do. Like I understand that too. Like I understand that also you typically choose one way or the other, either they're because of that bullshit, you're this totally disconnected dad. You don't know how to connect to your child because you weren't taught. You didn't see it. You don't know how to do it. Or you probably go the other extreme where it's just like, that's all I think about is like how to be a good dad, how to handle those situations.
So. No, anything with kids gets me. And then after losing someone close to me who suffered from cancer, if I see somebody with cancer in a movie, that really messes me up. Just because it's a personal experience.
See, things that are typically sad don't get me so sad. It's more than the other way.
What's weird, what'll get me tearful, which is weird, is anytime there's like a battle movie and then the good guys like come out of nowhere and start to win, I start to get emotional. I'm like, what's wrong with me?
Happens to me sometimes.
You too.
The triumphant moment. You're just like,
and it could be the stupidest movie, bro. It could be like, what was I watching? Pacific Rim. There's like robots fighting monsters, you know, and the robots like dead, and then they come out and they win, and I'm like getting emotional with my kid. And I'm like, why am I just emotional?
There's been a handful of times where I've cried in public, and it was like that was one of those. My career had ended as a football player. And we're just sitting there, we're going around, and we're kind of talking about our experience. And then, you know, knowing that I wasn't doing it anymore, it just all hit me.
Yeah.
And then that was like hard, but it was the championship, like we won. And because it was the hardest year, like had all these factors against us, like, and just that effort, you know, yeah. I don't know what it is, but like just everybody with that type of effort and like perseverance and then like seeing it pay off was just like,
oh yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah. You know what gets, you know, what'll make me cry every time to the point where you guys have seen me, I'll close my phone. If I see stupid Facebook memories or now your phone does this like memory, you know, video, and I see my kids from two or three years ago.
Yeah.
And I watch it. I got to turn it off because I'm going to cry in front of my friends. Right? I'm going to wait till I'm in the bathroom. I'll watch this.
So what always interests me, and this is just the introspective part of me, is that when I have emotions, and I've shared this for a long time, right?
Like, why?
Yes. Like people have asked, like, cause I talk a lot about like self-awareness is like, I think it's one of the most important or powerful things that you can ever learn. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, how do you train that? I said, well, for me, learning to train that started with dissecting my emotional highs and lows. So I lay in bed and think back to the day and go like, man, there was that moment where I got really angry at Sal for something. Like, what did
it always be?
I'm just using this example. It's not a real example.
Sure,
I've never had to go introspective on how I've never gotten that mad at you where I had to think about it. I knew where the fuck I was mad at you.
All right.
But using that example, right? Yeah. So, you know, I got really upset and frustrated with him. What was that? What did he do or what did he say that triggered that, which then in turn says, what does that say about me and what's going on there? And also the opposite is true. Like, boy, I just had this day, like a good example of this was Doug and I did the car thing and like, boy, that I just so much joy from that. Like, and it's not just like leaving it that, like, what was it about that? Yeah. I always try and unpack that. I always try and unpack these emotional swings that we have north or south and then say, what does that say about me? What is it? So do you do that? So like when you get emotional and you want to cry over the kids because of their old memories, do you try and unpack it or you just chalk it up as I get emotional?
Oh no, I unpack it. It's because I feel like I missed it. Like, oh my God, I wasn't present enough. Even if I was, it still feels like I missed it. You know what I mean?
So do you think, and so this will be really interesting since you've connected that. I wonder if, as the two young ones right now get older and you look back, does it shift the way you feel?
I don't know because
I know it's still early.
I just saw a video of my 4-year-old when he was 2 and I lost my marble.
So that's interesting. And you were very, very present for that.
It's not
feel
it's just gone. You know what it is? It's that
it's the giving tree, dude.
That God, hate that stupid
it's that freaking book, dude.
Don't ever.
I know. That's all I'm saying. The Facebook hits you just like that book.
It's just I saw him at 2 and he was giggling and he was hella chubby back then and we're playing and that little boy's gone. He's a new boy and guy's gone.
I don't get that. When the Facebook memories pop up. I get more joy. I look back.
Oh, it's a joyful tear, but it's still like, oh, that little guy's gone. That little, you know, and then I think to myself, like, who he is now, that's going to be gone soon in a year or two.
Yeah.
It happens so fast.
Yeah. I wonder if it'll change because I'm still so early in the game of fatherhood that I still am thoroughly enjoying every stage so much. Yeah. And you guys told me this would happen. You said that each stage is different and you love each one more than the last, but they're different. Right. And so
when you watch videos of Max, when he was 2, it doesn't make you choke up. Like, oh my God.
No, I get more like, oh man, that was, I remember that. Yeah. That was fun. Yeah. I remember that day. Yeah. Like I totally remember, especially the way I have trailed his personal Instagram is that I've strategically made an effort to like only post like once a week of his life for his whole life. And so I can really timeline and go back and like go.
Do you guys have any weird anger triggers? Like things that are like, I have one, like getting lost. Ooh, only because I have the worst sense of direction.
Yeah.
I've actually been told by, I was told by a client who was an expert in the field. She said it's a form of dyslexia. I could get lost. So like I drive home from here every day. We've been working here for 8 years. I can't get home without GPS. Okay. I cannot get home without GPS. Yeah. I get lost so easily. And it's been like that since I was a kid. So if I get lost, it triggers something inside of me where I'm so angry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the weirdest thing. But but that's obviously why.
Yeah. Oh, you're waiting on me.
You're so used to me just going right away. I just thought
throw it. He's got his.
I already have mine. I just thought I'd fuck with Justin a little bit.
Yeah. Well, all right. I mean, I'll be honest. Like, for me, a lot of times it's redundancy. So if I have to go back and do something that I know was good or, but somebody else has convinced me that I got to go back and redo something or like I lose my shit. I did not like that. I like creating things and letting it be and then moving to the next thing. Cause my brain just keeps going this direction. I don't like going backwards.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, at first I was like, I was always trying to work on that. I was like, I gotta get better at this. I gotta, you know, I gotta look back and I gotta tweak and I gotta, you know, work on making things more perfect. And I'm just like, now I just abandon it completely. I don't have to do that. Mm. Like I just stick with my strength, and that's my strength is keep creating, keep moving forward.
It is your strength.
And build people around me that can help me with that instead.
Mm.
But that used to be a huge trigger for me. Cause I would clap back real hard when somebody had like a, you know, different opinion about, you know, the way they would have done it.
Did you have to do your homework a lot or something? Redo it over and over again?
I don't know what that is.
You didn't it put must your have been through school. Right place,
yeah. It must've been part of school. I think, brought that out of me, but, and two, I think it's just that like the way that I do things, I like to do it myself and I like to figure it out myself. And I don't like, I understand people have written books and they've had processes and ways to like do it the most effective, efficient way.
Mm-hmm.
And like, sometimes I just don't care. I want to learn it for myself the way that I process it and the way that I want to do it. And I just don't care. Like, I don't care about your book in the way that, you know, you figured this thing out.
I mean, I have an analysis for you. I'm being one of your best friends and being around you for so long. And I think I know you really well. And I've said this about you before. I think that you're your own biggest critic and you don't need anybody to tell you that you fucked up or you did something wrong or you could do something better, because nobody is going to assess and analyze that more than you and care about it more than you. So, and I've known that about you for a very long time, that it's like, I don't need to go, if Justin didn't do something perfect or great, I don't need to go point it out because he's already overanalyzed it enough. And it's just going to annoy you if I come over and remind you of something you already know.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a lot of what that is.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that is a lot of that. And it's brought contention. I mean, we've worked through it, me and Courtney. Like, that's been a big one, because it's like,
oh, I can imagine.
She's like, well, and you got to think about different brains. Like, hers is very clinical.
Yeah.
And it's very like I read this. This is what I'm stuck on. Like, I don't have any vision of anything outside of this is the protocol. And so that's like loading the dishes. That's like taking things and putting the trash out this way and then closing the lid this way. And I need to tell you, you know. And there was a lot of that in the beginning, and it was just like, we were like,
oh, I can only imagine, because I can only imagine if I didn't make that read on you, trying to lead and manage you that way would be fucking, we would not get along.
No.
We would not get along.
Yeah. It was probably one of the first managers that did give me a space.
Yeah.
Because that was like, and coaches too, like I had to go through a few coaches before I got good ones that like
understood that.
Understood it. And then I thrived. But it's just, that's just my personality. So
Yeah. Mine's tied to the empathy thing. So I lack a lot of empathy for people that complain about their life. Boy, that's just a
trigger. Oh, I've seen that. I've seen you do that.
I get that. That'll trigger me, dude. I don't like that.
When people tell you you're privileged.
Oh, no.
God.
or they just bitch about their life, like, you know, how hard, how bad. Oh, that's, and I lack that. I really lack empathy, and that's an area I have to try and work on, because I'm quick to be triggered to that. Just like, I don't have a lot of patience for. I just
because you had a hard life.
Not even just that though, Sal. Like, forget my, like, I don't tie it, like, I don't try and have an oppression Olympics with them. Like, I was moral. Like, that's not how I feel about it. It's more like, you are doing none of that any service or good. So we all have had hardships. They just look different. Like, I don't think that my life was any more harder than anybody else in this room. I just think it was different. And I think you wasting any time talking about how hard and how shitty it is for you is like wasted energy. And if you really want to get out of that situation, the best thing you could do is be trying to solve those problems and talking about it. And you're only going to manifest more of it by bringing light to it and saying, it's so hard, it's so bad, poor me. It's just like, dude, get over yourself. Like, so I have a really hard time with having empathy for people. And that's not to discount and say they don't have it hard, but we all have it hard. Yeah. Everybody, hard is different for everybody. And there's all different levels of it. And getting into this, like comparing who's had it easier or harder is just, it's just a waste to me. It's just like, and the more you, what does compare to my child is like, I've learned that that's a superpower. Because if you've had to go through a lot more shit, you've had to solve more problems and figure more things out than the guy who got all the privilege. So give me all the shit and I don't want the privilege. The privilege is people think it's the easier route. Like, no, it's like, my biggest fear of my son is having as much privilege as he has, because he's not going to have to solve as many problems as I had to solve by the time he's a young, when I set him off when he's 18, if we were to compare our childs, forget the trauma and the bullshit, but think of just all the problem solving I had to go through and figure out that made me into the man that I was by the time I was off on my own by 17, that he just didn't have to do that. So I don't think it's an advantage. And people that talk about it as such an advantage is a massive trigger for me. So
Doug, do you have an anger trigger? That's like your weird one.
I don't know if it's weird. Maybe I think everybody probably feels the same way. Anything that wastes your time, for example, you're on hold for 45 minutes with a bank, and then all of a sudden it just goes blank, and you have to call again. That one will trigger me.
You and I are a lot alike in that area. I hate that. I mean, God bless Katrina. Like that is, she has completely, I don't know if she knew it or what about me, but part of my the ability for me to do what I've done today is that she found that out about me so early, and she just took all that off my plate. Was just like, that doesn't bother her. The fucking multiple calls, hangups, wasting hours of time.
If I do something and
it wasted 30 minutes of my time and it's some shit like that, I just lose my shit. Yeah. I'm just like, I could have been doing so many other things with my time right now. And this was where she's just like so chill about it. Like, she can be managing 7 different time wasting things at one time. And she's learned to just like clear my plate of all that. And that allows me to sprint.
Very fortunate.
No, it is. Because I forgot how much that's a huge pet peeve of mine.
That reminds me, I did have a moment where I kind of like lost it, but thankfully nobody was really around. But I was driving the new car I got, and then I drove it home and had it like, so I took my son the other day, and we were late for something, so I just made like a protein shake and we drank it and all this, and he had it in the back seat, and I don't allow him to ever bring food. Nobody ever brings food in the car. And I get home and my car had been baking in the sun.
Rancid, dude.
And thank God he wasn't there, because like it's a huge trigger for me if the smell is rancid and it smells so bad, and I know that I have to clean it and I know what I'm in for, kind of a thing, both those things together. And so like you have Katrina, like Courtney, like just knows ahead of time how angry and like how like really bad, like my, I lose it on that level. And so I came out, I was like, oh my God, smell my car. Like, go. And she's like, go for a walk, like let me handle this. And she like
gets
this
awesome
steam cleaner thing in there. I'm like, no, I don't want you to do that. Like, no, I don't like you when you're like this. Go for a walk. Yeah. And I'm just like, all right. And thank God, like she's learned. That's saved probably everybody in the household.
I would say that's one of the most ultimate things in a partnership, is when you find a partner who has that ability to see those things in you and like know like, this is, and vice versa for us too, right? Like if I can see those things that Katrina just does not want to deal with, can I step in and take care of those things? And she totally does that for
that's
me.
Right.
So that's
totally
that's right. Huge.
All right. Take a left here. The ingredients. So Joy Mode, right? The pre-sex supplement. Well, I like to take it before working out because it increases the pump. The ingredients in Joy Mode, I believe you could actually measure a difference in your blood pressure when you take it. That's how much it dilates your blood vessels. Wow. So the ingredients in there have been shown in studies to improve endothelial health. This is blood vessel health because of the boost in nitric oxide. And I would like some listeners to take their blood pressure, drink Joy Mode, an hour later, take your blood pressure again, and you'll probably see it be a little bit lower from the nitric oxide.
Boosting. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the ingredients in there, if you take them regularly, you should get a measurable difference.
Good for all the different types of pumps.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's a pre-sex supplement. That's what they made it for. It was for... Yeah,
you use it for working out. I use it for sex.
And you guys like it.
Yeah, I mean,
for working out, it's
great.
I mean,
not together, just separately.
You guys use it together.
I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah, I have to make sure that there's a distinction there.
Yep. Was it Sal or Justin who did that to the clear guy? He got all weird. Where he said, like, are you guys together? And then you're like,
oh, yeah.
Well, together.
Yeah, we're not together. And then he got all awkward.
It's like it's a joke. Yeah, like, I guess you can't joke like that.
Yeah, you can't. We're not in the Bay Area. You can't joke like that.
But yeah, for blood flow, that's like the best supplement. So Ned is hemp oil extract that you feel. It's high in CBD, but other cannabinoids. Listen, take this. 45 minutes later, you feel euphoria. It really works. Try it for yourself. Go to helloned.com. That's helloned.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump. Get 20% off. Back to the show.
Our first caller is Derek from Florida.
What's up, man?
How you doing, Derek?
How you guys doing? Thank you for everything you guys do. And thank you for having me, guys.
You got awesome. It. How can we help you?
So I'm going to jump right into my question. Is that cool?
Yep.
All right. So I'm a typical story. I'm 42 years old. I got a 4-year-old son. Around the time that we had him, I just started letting myself go. Time was, I just didn't have enough time to work out. I made every excuse in the world, got super lazy, gained about 40 pounds. About a month ago, I decided I wanted to start trying to get myself back in shape. Started waking up early in the mornings, doing some workouts at night as well, trying to not overdo it, trying to follow some of the rules that you guys have put forth where I don't want to put too much of a toll on my body. But at the same time, kind of struggling with the diet part of it. So my main question that I have is when I put in a daily energy expenditure calculator, all of my details, it pumps out a number that's around 3,000 to 3,200, depending on, which calculator I'm using. I know that I need to be at a deficit if I want to lose some fat, but I also don't want to go too hardcore. My issue is that in the past, anytime that I eat over about 2,400 calories with a cheat meal at the end of the week, I tend to gain weight. So I'm worried if I jump up to 3,000 calories, am I actually giving my body too much food and too many calories? Or am I going to be in a point where my body's actually getting what it needs and maybe I'll stop storing fat and using it for what I actually want it to do, which is build muscle?
Derek, how far into this are we? Like you put on the 40 pounds and then you wanted to make change. How long have you been attempting this right now?
It's been about a month. Now, I do want to preface this by saying before I had my son, I was down at like 10 to 12% body fat, 205. I'm 6'2". So I had a pretty decent
physique.
Yeah. It went to hell after we had the kid.
Are you, and you're tracking right now, is that how you know you're eating 2,400 on average?
Yeah, so I'm eating 24 on average, but I do add the cheat meal every week, and that varies. Some weeks I'm only adding like 400 calories. Some weeks on that Saturday, I'll add like 1,000. It just varies on what we decide to choose.
So that's your maintenance then, if that's what you're eating on a regular basis. Those calculators are a rough estimate, and they can be off significantly. So I always tell people it's a good starting point, but tracking is where you're going to get your maintenance.
I also wouldn't start you like that, though, either, though.
I mean, at 24.
Well, look, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I wouldn't even be cutting right now. If you put 40 pounds, okay, on in the last couple years, I don't even have to ask you questions. You were eating. I mean, you were doing some damage. So probably, I don't know if you drink, if you eat a lot of fast food, but to put, okay, yeah. So if you put 40 pounds on, you were fucking around, like for real. So I'm going to go like, hey, if you were my client, I would assess that with you and be like, let's just knock out a couple of these really bad things that you're probably doing that you know about already. I don't know. Your mind would be binging ice cream at night and drinking on weekends or something like that. And so I'd be like, that's all I want you to do. And let's go after eating protein. Cause I guarantee if you're eating all that shit, you're probably under consuming on protein, over consuming on empty calories or trash calories. I don't actually want you to cut yet. I really want to, especially a guy that like you, who was in really good shape, who probably had a lot more muscle because you probably lost muscle and put body fat on. So I'm gonna focus on building right now. I'm not tripping about the scale, even though I know you may be a little bit in your head. I'm like, I want to feed your body correctly. Get out. Let's cut out. And I wouldn't go crazy either, because if you were eating that out of bounds, I just need to tighten up a few things that are probably the gross offenders and really go after eating protein and building muscle, especially for the first couple of months. I mean, it would look very similar. I don't know if you paid attention to my comeback story I did on YouTube, but I didn't quite fall out of 40 pounds out of shape, but I'd fallen out of shape for me and I hadn't been training consistently at all. And I documented how I ate and how I trained to come back. And what I didn't do was go right into a cut, even though I needed to lose body fat. It was, listen, I've lost a lot of muscle the last couple, you know, for me, it was months. For you, it's been years. So let's go get that muscle back, because that muscle is going to make the getting lean and shredded way easier if I do that. So the focus should be, in my opinion, should be that first. Wouldn't you guys do the same thing?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. You're what, 230 now, 240?
About 240.
Okay, and mm-hmm. You said, so you've just started last month. Does that mean you started working out again last month?
Yeah, I went extreme because I can't do anything in moderation. So I went out and bought a full rack, home gym, functional trainer, everything I would need at the gym so that I had no more excuses. So I've been doing about 3 full body workouts per week, and then I add in a little bit of core work on a fourth day.
Yeah.
And then every day I'm walking about a half hour.
Yeah, you got to feed. I agree with Adam. Feed the muscle growth that you're going to that you're going to start noticing, and that's going to be more effective for fat loss than going to cut. Going in a cut right now, especially at 2,400 calories, a guy your size, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'd put you up to 2,700 calories to start with. High protein, try to hit 220 grams of protein a day, and then just focus on getting stronger, and you're gonna get a nice body composition change is what's gonna happen.
Yep.
And then at some point, once your calories start to ramp up, which they will, as you start to build muscle, then cutting won't be a problem. You start to cut right now, you're gonna find yourself.
Yeah, we're not even there yet.
You're gonna find yourself in a situation where you're eating 1,800 calories a day.
Yeah.
I bet your workouts are going
to
suck.
You're ramped it up quite a bit.
I'm guessing if you're cutting down to those calories and you're also allowing a cheat night, you probably have a hard time hitting your protein. I imagine you have a hard time hitting 220 grams of protein every single day. It would be hard to do that unless you're eating super clean every single day.
Yeah, I've been eating really clean the last month, and I've seen the scale move a little bit. Not that much, I think, because I'm building some of that muscle back as well. But I'm averaging between about 175 to 200 grams of protein a day. But this is new. It's not like I've been doing this for very long.
Right.
220 a day. Yeah, focus on strength training. Get your calories up to 2,800 calories, and your body will change in the right way. And then slowly increase the calories over time. The body fat will come off through that process.
Yep.
If you go straight into a cut right now, you're going to end up in a situation that's going to be it's going to suck.
It's going to suck and really slow. It doesn't mean you couldn't see some body fat loss that way. It's going to be a slow process, which you're probably already feeling that. It's because you're not, what you've done probably in this month isn't horrible. I wouldn't be surprised if you've made decent progress. You might have lost a couple pounds of fat and got a pound or two muscle back, but you'd be far better off leaning into, I'm going to go build muscle right now. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to worry about the scale going down and losing right now. Like, my goal now is let's go get back that muscle that you had before and put that on your body, because that it's like building your engine. It's like, hey, you want to go race right now? It's like, it's not time to race. Let's go put the horsepower in this engine. And then we'll race. And then you're having a better time winning that race that way versus, hey, let's just go start racing right now. It's like, no, let's go rebuild that engine. And what's great is that you've been here before, so you'll get it back pretty fast, dude. That, especially if you're leaning into it, you're feeding the body enough calories to actually build muscle.
And protein in particular.
So if you're feeding it enough to build, then it'll build it back way quicker than the average person because you have that muscle memory on your side. So lean into that. And then what we do is if you got your size, I'm wanting you to be up over 3,500 calories before I bring you back the other way. So if you were my client, this is the way I'd be communicating this. All right, Derek, this is our first goal. Our first goal is I want to get you up to 3,400 calories and not gaining any weight. That's what I want you to do. And if we've done that, then I know what's happening is we're ramping that metabolism up, and you're now, your new maintenance level is like 3,400. Before I'd even think about cutting you on your first one, you're a good sized guy. You're not a little petite dude. So I don't want you cutting from 20 something calories. You should be well over 3000, especially if you're training 3 days a week and you're walking and you're doing some decent activity. Mm-hmm. So we need to feed you and focus that way first and then come back and cut. Yeah. And if you haven't had a chance to kind of watch the journey that I had on my comeback, it would be good for you to watch it, because you hear me have the conversation of why I'm doing this and why am I focusing on eating more now and only training this much. And you get to hear me kind of walk through that whole process, because you're in a similar situation where you've lost a bunch of muscle, put on some body fat, been out of it, but you know, that'll come back quick for you.
Yeah. And do you mind if I address more of your email in part of this?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
The testosterone that you're treating to get it elevated, that'll be really hard.
I didn't realize we were even doing that.
Yeah, that'll be really hard and with low calories and a cut. Like, a cut tends to lower testosterone. So if you're in this process of trying to bring levels back up, what we're saying is the most effective dietary and exercise approach. At building muscle, it's a great way to make your testosterone more effective, and also in many cases raise testosterone. So yeah, I wouldn't go in a cut for many different reasons, that being one of them.
Are you taking TRT or no?
No, he's on enclomiphene.
Oh, okay. So you're trying to get back, like, okay. I thought he was.
Yeah, I didn't want to just cut off my production. I was hoping to increase it naturally. I don't know the pros and cons, and I don't know if you guys want to get into all that, but I thought that was the best decision for me right now.
What you'd want to do,
HGH, I would have thought they would have put them on, or HCG, I mean.
No, so what you'd want to do is go on this path that we're saying, ramp your calories up, high protein, lift weights, get stronger, you're on a clomiphene, go off in clomiphene, stay on this path, don't overtrain, don't go in a cut. 2 months later, see where your testosterone levels are at.
Yeah.
If they stay high, then you're great. If they drop down, then TRT would be the next approach. But if you go on enclomiphene, raise your testosterone, do all this stuff, then you go on a cut and you go off enclomiphene, your testosterone goes down. All right, was it the cut? Did I go too aggressive? Like, what's going on here? So
yeah,
that's how
I didn't even read further into this and realize that this is even more important that we focus on building muscle right now. Yeah. Like, if I didn't even realize we have lower test, this is also by the way, why it feels very slow for you right now is low testosterone. If testosterone's low and you're trying to build muscle and get lean again, like, it's going to be a slower process. So part of building the metabolism up and building muscle and increasing calories should also boost that. It will boost that testosterone, whether it puts you in a really good range or just boost it a little bit. Yeah. It's going to boost it. Versus if you're in a cut and a deficit right away and you're low testosterone, it's only going to sink it. So the getting your calories up,
but you'd have to go off in clomiphene and then be off for a couple months to see if it sticks.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
But, and you think the program I'm on right now, 3 days a week, full body with some walking, that's great.
Yeah, I like that.
If you're getting stronger, it's working.
Are you following MAPS? Is that anabolic? Is that what you're following? Or are you doing your own thing?
Right now, I'm just doing my own thing, just kind of winging it.
Oh, well, why don't we send you MAPS anabolic so you can follow that, which is basically that protocol, but it's already planned out for you, so you don't have to think about it. So just follow that. I think it's a great program for where you're at. And then I'd love to hear back from you in like 30, 60 days. Just shoot back to me kind of where you're at, and we can assess more of the testosterone stuff, because if it doesn't go the way you want, then that's where we can talk about some different options to support and help that. And just so you know, you can take synthetic testosterone, and you can still keep your, if you still want to try and have another baby, you can still do that. If you get off of it, it doesn't ruin it forever. There's a lot of myths around taking testosterone and how it just like ruins your natural testosterone. It's not true. You can, especially a therapeutic dose. We're not taking bodybuilder super physiological doses and doing it all wrong. Like, you would do it in a very therapeutic way. And they can manage keeping your natural levels up also by taking HCG. I got Katrina pregnant on testosterone. So I had already been taking testosterone for years. We knew we wanted to get pregnant, so I took HCG with it, and that brought up my normal levels, and we had Max. So totally not a problem.
Okay, good to know.
But yeah, circle back with this, Derek. I'd like to hear back maybe in a month or two after where you're at, your testosterone, see if we can help you from there.
Perfect. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Awesome, man.
You got it, man.
I didn't even see the testosterone thing. That makes it even more stronger.
And you know, this is my experience. In my experience, taking a man around his age from, you know, not exercising, eating poorly, exercising, eating well, testosterone reliably, not always, but reliably double.
Yeah. Oh, it'll go up. I feel super confident.
But clomiphene raises it artificially. So that's going to throw off, like, is it working or not? That's why he has to go off for a couple months to see if it sticks. It's an interesting approach within clomiphene.
Why isn't clomiphene and not HCG? So
HCG is more used for boosting fertility. And clomiphene is, it's like Clomid, but it's the isolated isomer.
Yeah, it's what you take when you come off of a cycle.
So it attaches to the estrogen receptor, tricks your body into thinking you don't have estrogen. So your male body, what happens is it produces more testosterone because that's where we get estrogen from. But I don't know. I find it interesting because I don't know too many people who went on that and went off and then it stayed up. It tends to be up because you're on it. Then you go off, it goes back down. Mm-hmm. It, from the people I know. But
that's like any exogenous
I'm not super familiar option. With the literature. Yeah. But, you know, when you combine it with like lifestyle change, that's the way to go.
So yeah. And then addressing kind of the point I made with the 40 pounds, you put 40 pounds on. In a relatively short period of time, like you're eating like an asshole, yeah. You know it. You know what I'm saying? Like
you don't
need
hard.
Yeah, you don't need to get crazy change that. You don't need to go radical. Yeah. So diving deep, I'm sure he's doing a lot of things I'm saying. I'm drinking, I'm eating out like crazy. If you're eating like that out of bounds, like you just get rid of a couple major offenders, like all alcohol gone or something, and then hit my protein intake and you'll see
and lift
and you'll see crazy change from that. And then we can start adjusting. Like there's no reason to go into a cut aggressively already, especially considering he's coming from a guy that sounds like he was pretty buff, pretty jacked before 12% body fat, 220 pounds. Like, you know, he had some muscle on him. So he's got that working in his favor too. To not feed the body enough calories and protein to grow would be a huge mistake.
Yeah, most people do well growing into fat loss.
Yes.
Our next caller is Gabriel from Texas.
Gabriel, what's happening?
What's going on, man?
What's up?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good man. Right. How can we help you?
So I just wanted to say that I'm kind of like a newer listener to you guys. I believe I found out about you guys last year when Sal did that podcast with Bradley Martin.
Yeah.
And dude, your testimony was very powerful. Thanks, man. Just wanted to throw that out there before I got into my question. I'm kind of like in a newer walk with Christ again myself because I kind of fell off. And like hearing those type of things makes me believe like, okay, yeah, like this is the real deal now.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Very cool.
Yeah. So before I get into my question, I was just going to give a little bit of context. So I started powerlifting in January of 2024, and then I moved to Houston in June of 2024. So I kind of had like a little bit of trouble adjusting to the weather, like, you know, the type of weather change. But so since then, my one rep max numbers for squat was 440. My bench was 293 and my deadlift was 480. And that's competing at 82.5 kg. So now I'll get into my question. Since I had started powerlifting in January, I had a recent change in my career path. I now work graveyard hours. So I work from 1 a.m. to 11 a.m. And if I was going to ask you guys, would I have to prioritize more my meals or more my sleep if I wanted to improve those numbers? Because I know both are like pretty important.
Ooh. Sleep. Sleep's going to hurt you faster. So first off, you're strong, dude.
Great numbers, dude.
And thanks for the encouraging words. So here's what you want to do with you work graveyard shift. And it gets really hard when somebody works graveyard 2 days a week and then 2 days a week, they work different hours, but you're consistently graveyard, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You want to mimic nighttime as much as possible when you get home and you're going to go to sleep. Okay. And you want to mimic daytime at night as much as possible. Okay. To keep you awake for work. So bright lights, that's fine. When you're at work, keep that happening. About an hour before you're off, I would put on blue light blocking glasses. Now, depending on your job, you can wear the mild ones that are maybe slightly yellow tinted or maybe clear. Then when you get home, switch to red. Red blue light blocking glasses. Get blinds, get blackout shades in your room and make yourself go to sleep like it's nighttime. Yeah. Then when you wake up, start your day with your meals. But that's going to do, because you have to trick your brain into thinking night is day and day is night. so that you don't suffer some of the consequences of sleep deprivation.
It has to really be an aggressive approach to like creating that environment. Because it is such a this schedule is so tough, and it's tough to give advice because it is really like something that's not beneficial long term.
Yeah, but when somebody does what I'm saying, you
can make it through.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of the negative effects dissipate, but it's kind of an intentional thing. And then on your wake hours, just be structured with your diet and make sure you get your food intake and your nutrition. This may mean when you're at work that you use I don't know how if this is available to you, if you could bring one or two meals at work with you, or if a shake is more convenient. But that it's going to require a little bit of planning. But if you do it the way we're saying, I think you'll be okay.
Okay. Yeah. I was just asking because like my work is very, I don't want to say unorganized, but like there's not a set time that we go to lunch. My typical time is like around 5 a.m. That's usually when they'll send us. But if it's busy, they'll send us like closer to 7 or 8 a.m. And that was one of the things that I was telling my coach. I forgot to mention I do have a coach.
Okay.
And I told him like, hey, man, it's hard for me to get meals in because sometimes when they send me at 7 a.m., I get off by 11 and it's like I just ate 4 hours ago. I'm not hungry anymore. Like, but on the days that they do send me at my normal time, I am able to kind of get most of my meals in. I just don't know if that affects anything because I know you guys say protein is one of those things that doesn't roll over. So like, I just wanted to see what you guys thought. Cause my coach did tell me the same thing. He was like, dude, you need to prioritize your sleep way more than anything right now.
Yep. It's the largest contributed injury, which is a big deal for powerlifting is poor sleep. But so what about a shake or something like that? Where, you know, you could add the extra protein. You just go grab it real quick and take it. Are you able to do that at work when you don't have a break?
Yes, sir.
There you go. That would help.
Okay.
So the guys both are talking to you like good coaches and trainers. I'm going to talk to you like you're my boy. And I'd say, bro, this is not the time to try and be a power lifter in your life. Like, yeah, only because, okay. And I know because you're good at it, obviously. And so I know how hard it would be to probably tell you that. But if I was your boy looking out for you, I'd say, doing something that is redlining, like as far as max reps, while also risking good sleep or bad sleep, is just you putting yourself in a risk category that is just not ideal, you know? And is like this time of your life, I'd be like, man, it's like I don't know if you plan to work this way forever. Or this is just a period of your life right now. And it's probably the worst time to also try and become the strongest guy too, or strongest version of you, just risk wise. So I'd be in your ear about that. Like, hey, is this like necessary? We do this right now. And you really, really love it that bad because it's probably not the best way to be training yourself right now.
Usually I'm the guy that says something like that, but there's more, I have more questions, right? Do you have a wife and kids?
No, sir. I'm single.
Okay. So there's always compounding factors.
It's okay to destroy yourself.
No. It's not okay to destroy yourself, but you can't. You do have the ability, the time, to be much more disciplined and structured.
Right. You could be selfish right now.
So and you can do that because there's a lot of guys I know who go to bed. You know, they have a normal schedule, but they got three kids, a wife, and a job, and that's their compounding factor. So it's just going to require discipline and structure. Now, if you're that guy, no kids, no wife, single dude, you work swing shift or night shift, but you also like to go out, you like to do, you know, hang out with your buddies and lose sleep, that's going to mess you up. But if you're disciplined and structured and your coach adjusts your programming when you need it.
That's a really good way.
I think you're okay.
That's a really good way to put it because I'm assuming you're a younger guy and you probably still have a social life too, because I think that something's got to give here.
Yeah.
And so if you are, and I guess that's if you were my boy, I'd be really questioning that. I'd be like, hey man, how much do you love this powerlifting? Because if you love it, then do it and then sacrifice the other stuff.
That's right.
But I think to do all the things you're doing and then also have somewhat of a social life and do that.
You just got
to
be real disciplined.
Can you just train without competing? Can you just emulate that and like keep building, you know, because it is really not ideal. Like I just don't see a lot of like forward progress with this type of schedule and environment. It's just really the odds are against you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless your whole life revolves around that, because to Sal's point, like, yeah, if you, But I mean, I don't know, young single guy, do you still go out with your buddies every once in a while and have drinks and do your thing? Or
maybe all your buddies are like you and they're all powerlifters, which is cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It's pretty rare that I do go out, only because like I'm still new to Texas in general, so I don't know many people there. That's kind of why like I decided to do this, because I can dedicate all my time to it and because it's fun. Okay. Yeah, like in terms of going out, I'll maybe go out like once or twice a month, usually when it's only my week one or week two. Okay. But my friends that I have met over there, they kind of already know, like, oh, okay, he said something about week three, so he's not coming out tonight.
Yeah, bro, how old are you?
Yeah. I mean, if you're doing
it, how old are you? How old are you, Gabriel? Okay.
Say that again, sir.
How old are you?
28.
Okay, listen. One of the best things you could do is just stay focused and disciplined anyways. So I don't think you're missing out by not going out with your buddies all the time. I think focusing on powerlifting, your job, personal growth, I think that's great. I think it's going to serve you more in the future anyway. So I don't think you're missing out on a ton. Especially, you know, if you have a social network that you'll hang out with here and there, but you're not like, you know, hurting yourself, you're not drinking a bunch or whatever, I don't think that's a bad thing. In fact, when you talk to young men like you, the ones that do well are the ones that tend to be disciplined in some area. Otherwise, lack of discipline, you know, we tend to go all over the place. So it's really on, you sound pretty disciplined to me. Yeah. And I think you can make it work so long as you stay, if you plan and you stay structured. Sure. But if that's not the case, then I mean, Adam's 100% right. You try and do everything and forget it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like if you're all in on this, bro, then you can do it. You absolutely can do it. I don't know enough. And if I was talking to you as my boy who hangs out with you and drinks every once in a while, I'd tell you that probably not a good idea right now, bro. But hey, if you're all in this, I mean, I like it. I mean, but you do got to get really disciplined. Sleep becomes the number one priority. Nutrition becomes the number two priority. And you build your routine and stuff around that. And so it can be done. It definitely can be done.
Okay. Do I have time for one more quick question? It kind of ties in.
Yeah,
sure.
So usually my coach tells me not to do like heavy accessories on week three and four because we're more pushing like those primary lifts.
Yeah.
Is it bad if some days that I skip them because like, so let's say for an example, on Tuesdays, I have my secondary squat and secondary bench day, but I will skip accessories because I slept throughout the day and then I have to go to work. We'll go home to get ready for work.
Yes.
I go at nighttime. So is that a bad thing that I skip accessories sometimes?
No, nope.
That's a better way.
Yeah. Especially since you're doing the accessories week one, week two, you know what I mean? Now you're getting into the heavier lifting. That's actually what I would tell you to do.
Yep.
Yeah, whenever we get into the heavier, like week three and four, he dials down the volume. He actually listens to you guys. Good. I had asked him at my very first comp if he knew about you guys, and he was like, oh, yeah, I listen to them a lot. And so like when he told me that, I was just like, okay, I really trust what this guy is saying. I just really wanted your guys' opinion about the sleep and food as well.
Yeah, sounds like you got a good coach, dude.
He's on point. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. And I don't know. I definitely think you're giving me the vibe like this is something you're serious about.
Yeah.
That you're a serious young man. You want to do this.
Yes,
so you got the discipline and you structure your night, you know, you sleep and all that stuff. Do it. Go for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you guys say to prioritize the sleep more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It should really dictate a lot of everything, right? Even your intensity towards the workout and stuff like that. That's how you stay healthy.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear back from you after your meet. Hit us up.
When's your competition?
I just had one in March. So that was a rookie one. And I'm talking to my coach about finding maybe a local one again sometime in October or November.
I'd love to hear back from you afterwards.
Yeah.
Reach back out, dude.
Let us know how it goes.
Okay. Appreciate you guys.
I got it, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, dude. I mean, okay. Because you're right. Like, typical 28-year-old, not very disciplined. Yeah,
single 28.
But think about us and how we were at 28, and not saying that we were did everything right, but when we were focused on something, that would have been like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And he kind of gives me that vibe. And so I think you can totally do it. But you do that, plus your night shift, plus you're going out and partying, you know, twice a week. Like, no way. No way.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen.
Our next caller is Claire from the UK.
Hello, Claire.
How you doing, Claire?
Hello. Hi, guys. It's such a pleasure to be able to meet you all. I appreciate how much you've changed my training for the better.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much. How can we help you?
So currently I'm in a reverse diet trying to gain muscle, but recently I've started to notice an imbalance in my hips when looking at progress photos. I'm unsure what is causing it, whether it is fat muscle or maybe a hip mobility issue. I do have a hard time growing my quads, so I do wonder if it could be related. I have attached pictures to give a better representation.
Okay. What do you mean a hip imbalance? Like one side, let me see. I'm looking at the picture here.
So like one side's like quite square compared to the other.
You might be a little overcritical, but yeah. I will tell you this. If you notice an imbalance in exercise, that's always what we want to pay attention to first. So if you do like one-legged exercises or movements and you notice
asymmetry,
there's an asymmetry or a big difference, addressing that will address the development issues that you think you might be seeing. Do you have our program Map Symmetry? Because that would be the perfect program for you.
So at the minute, I'm actually following Aesthetic, which is being quite good, to be fair. But to be fair, when I've been doing my front squats, I have been noticing like a bit of tightness in my left hip where I've got an imbalance, because I don't really tend to do front squats usually.
I would like to send you Symmetry, and I'd like you to switch to Symmetry.
Yeah, go to Symmetry.
You'll get better results.
You're good to do unilateral training for a bit. You'll notice a lot more if there is any kind of difference and discrepancy there.
I'd love to go to Symmetry, and then I'd love for Doug to put you in our private forum. And then if you show me videos of you squatting, it'll really help us. Because if I can see the way you move, we can address where the potential imbalance is coming from. It's hard to just tell from a picture. I can kind of see what you're talking about. You are being pretty critical, but I can see what you're talking about. But it's hard to tell if it's due to overdevelopment, lighting, and inflammation. Like it could be a host of different things. And so seeing you squat and move will really help us get to the bottom of what could be potentially going on. Do you ever do 90-90s for hip mobility? Have you done those before?
Yeah, so before bed in the nighttime, like I always stretch.
So when you do 90-90s, can you lift your back foot off the ground, and do you notice a difference between left and right?
I'm trying to think. I don't think I've actually like taken my feet off the ground before, but I certainly, when I'm stretching, like my left leg in front, like it does feel tighter.
Okay, so there's a video on YouTube, on our Mind Pump YouTube, where I do 90-90s and I show the progressions of it. So if you can look, I don't know if Doug or Dylan can send that over to you, but I'll have them send that to you and watch the video. And then what I want you to do is to do those 90-90s and try and lift your back foot up. What that will do is if there is a discrepancy, right, and an imbalance, one of them you'll be able to lift up a lot further than the other one, and then that'll tell us something about that hip, right, or the opposite. So,
also, I do want to say this, because how long have you been strength training in doing this?
I've been training for about 10 years. I know I probably look younger than what I actually am. But I've just started Aesthetic. Like I'm in phase one currently still. So.
Okay. You do look a lot younger than that. I would like, when did you start lifting weights at 10? But there is no body that's perfectly symmetrical. And sometimes the trap we get into oftentimes is we take a picture of ourselves and we look at ourselves and we study our bodies and we focus so much on any what we could perceive to be imperfections. And I want to communicate this to you because if this mindset or this challenge will never go away until you stop studying yourself. So, and the best way to do that, in my opinion, because I could tell you not to do something, but I need to tell you to do something instead, is focus on your performance and how you feel. It's a great way to take you off that direction. Otherwise, I'm going to tell you this right now, you can strength train for the rest of your life. And if you study your body, you will always, always, always find areas that need this or that, or that's not perfect or whatever. And then fitness is not really improving the quality of your life. It's becoming a problem.
You know why Sal's saying this, right? Mm. You already have an incredible physique. So it is very balanced, very symmetrical. You've got a great physique already. And so we're definitely nitpicking right now for sure. So, but I'm more interested in the feeling different pain or any of that like that. That's what I want to get to the bottom of that. As far as the way you look amazing and you're doing great and you've done great, obviously. I think you have a very balanced physique. You look like you could compete. So I'm not critical of that. I'm very curious to, you know, do you notice impingement or pain or anything?
That's what we should discomfort always pay attention to.
And that's why I want to see your squat, because then I can help you break that down and get to the bottom of that. And Symmetry is the right program.
Symmetry, so you'll get great results, period, end of story, from Symmetry.
So we'll send Symmetry over. I'll have Doug put you in the private forum. And then if you get a chance, I'd love for you to shoot a video of you squatting. Give me a good view, front, side, back. You know, just prop your phone up and, you know, do five reps on each side, right? Five from the side, five from the front, five from the back. That'll really, and then tag us in the forum, and then we can take a look at your movement and then get to the bottom of what potentially could be going on.
That's perfect. Thank you.
Sound you got good?
I was just wondering as well, just out of curiosity, like, when should I actually like cut down from a reverse diet?
When you get to the point,
like, I'm kind of stuck at the moment.
You get to the point where you feel like you're just eating a lot of food and you feel strong and you feel good, and you're like, okay, I don't think I want to eat anymore, then that typically is a good place to start reversing.
How many calories are you at right now?
2,200.
Okay. How tall are you?
5'6". Five foot six. Yeah.
Oh, you're tall.
Yeah. Okay. I'd keep going.
Yeah.
I'd probably get you up to 26.
Yeah.
27 and then do a cut.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Once we put you in the forum, you can communicate with us in there. So we're going to have Doug put you into our private forum. And then as you're going through this process, you can just ask questions and tag us in there. We'll help you out.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you.
Okay.
You got it.
All right. We'll see you in there.
Oh, thank you. See you.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah, just the overly critical. But critical. What Adam is saying, and I want listeners to really pay attention to this, asymmetries from a performance and pain perspective are important to pay attention to. Asymmetries from you studying your body typically are not. Now, there are asymmetries that are massive. These are the ones you go to the doctor, like, what is happening to my arm or whatever. But the ones, like, I mean, I could study any body, and I could point out imperfections, because what's the ideal? It's an ideal that's unachievable. Mm-hmm. And you want to get out of that trap. Otherwise, fitness becomes this tyranny, and it's terrible.
We don't move completely balanced. And so therefore, you know, it's just never going to equate to that.
No.
I mean, no normal person would look at her and think that she has any imbalances. Yeah. Nah. The average person would go, oh my gosh, she's great. In incredible shape, right? Yeah. So... Yeah, I mean, but the things I'm listening to is the hip pain discomfort. Like, if you notice that, or you notice when you do front squats, something's off. Like, okay, let's get to the bottom of that. That's important. That's could be a movement issue that we can fix. Mm-hmm. And so I am interested and curious about that. As far as how critical she is of how she looks, I think she's beyond good right now. And this is her in a reverse diet too. This is not even her leaned out. Right, so. Right. She leans out. She looks crazy. She can compete with a physique like that.
If you like Mind Pump, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano. Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support. And until next time, this is Mind Pump.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with AutoQuote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Celebrate the 4th of July with premium comfort at Mattress Warehouse. Right now, save up to $600 on luxurious Stearns & Foster's mattresses crafted for a timeless style and exceptional support. It's the perfect time to upgrade your sleep during the Mattress Warehouse 4th of July sale. Come in to find incredible deals on a huge selection of mattresses. Plus, get 0% interest financing, free next-day delivery, and our one-year low-price guarantee. Don't miss these Independence Day savings only at Mattress Warehouse.